One. Hey, everybody. Welcome into the show. This is Redacted. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we tend to cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. And we have a very busy show for you on this Wednesday. Good to see all of you. Let us know where you're joining us from. Jack, by the way, if you subscribe to the show live, because we're live right now, your name will pop up here on the big board. So if you subscribe, whether on Rumble or on YouTube, your name will pop up there on the big board. But we've got a lot of busy stories we're going to cover tonight. We're going to talk about what's unbelievably and hidden in a bunker inside of Ukraine they don't want you to know about, but we have the video. We're going to dive into what's actually happening with the babies that are being harvested inside Ukraine.
Plus, Patrick Lancaster shows us what is done with those tanks that the West sends that they don't keep track of. Guess what? They actually can be used for the other side. We have reporting on that. Plus, we have a guest who wants to make the parallel. Is Ukraine headed for a future as the next Middle East? What does that mean? We're going to let our guest break this down. This is an interview where I guess we are all being asked to wonder, why do we swallow war rhetoric when we've been through this before? Don't we have a template? Don't we not want this? These are some questions we're going to push ourselves to ask collectively.
All right. And we're also going to look at both. We got an ABC reporter who's caught on a hot mic about COVID lies.
This is amazing.
Yeah, we're going to play that for you. Plus, Justin Trudeau better get ready because something big is about to happen in Canada. Millions of people could be taking to the streets in protest, a part of a million person march against the LGBTQ plus LTYVZXYZ double WWF agenda in Canada. So all of that and so much more as Redacted starts right now. Oh, someone says, imagine being interrogated listening to that music over and over again. The redacted
no
music.
No, thank you.
You know you're in trouble.
No, thank you. It does sort of spawn a certain like, uh-oh, you know, things are going to be said here. I guess that's what we were going for.
Yeah.
Is it?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's it shines a light. The music helps shine a light on the truth. Hey, someone yesterday was, Deborah wrote me an email and said, hey, is there a way that I can skip the intro, the 30-minute intro? And I said, well, if you're watching us live, no. I mean, you could skip it by showing up at 4 p.m. Eastern time. That's when the intro is complete because we start at 30 minutes early and we are here live right now at 4 p.m. Eastern time. But if you're watching us on replay, all you need to do, there's chapter markers that are set up in our YouTube videos, right, David? We have chapter markers, so you can skip right ahead from the intro in YouTube right to the start of the show. Or if you're watching us on Rumble, I think they have the technique there as well. But if not, you can just scrub ahead 30 minutes and start the show right then.
Well, and I want to put a message out to Deborah that if she figures out how to skip the intro while we're live, please let us know because that's time travel, technically. So
awesome. Right. Yeah, that's crazy.
What are you doing? So I just want to remind you, who you just spoke to was David. Clayton and I are married.
So let me cut back there.
And go ahead. Yeah, are you ready?
Yeah, I just was, it was in focus.
Buckle
so
up.
Yeah.
Okay. We got a tweet this week saying that Philip and David are twins. They're not twins. They're brothers. Philip is away because he is the best pool player in the world. Yeah. So he is playing a tournament to prove that. So we have Grim in his place, who's working really hard and doing an amazing job stepping in because this is a hard show to run. So we appreciate our team. I'm the only lady here. That's why the graphics are so masculine.
That's right. Right.
That's what we do.
Our graphics have balls. That's right.
All right. You know what else has balls is our newsletter.
That's right.
Yes, we have cojones because we write about things that the mainstream media largely ignores. You can find the newsletter at redacted.inc. All you have to do, put in your email address, and then you'll get this authentication email. Click it tell us that, yes, you want the newsletter, because this is a great resource for you to get the original links to the stories that we cover here so that you can come prepared. You can use it as a study guide. You can use it as an archive. You can use it as a fun email to read and start your day off. We work really, really hard on it. It has a lot of the stories we covered here, plus more. Plus, it's free. It's a free subscription, and it's a great way for us to keep in contact with you. So please do subscribe at redacted.inc.
All right. Well, some disturbing reports have emerged from Ukraine over the past few weeks of women being kept in underground bunkers by companies that are making billions of dollars off of the baby farming industry. Yes, baby farming in Ukraine is a booming industry, rakes in billions of dollars, actually. Here is the Swiss-based baby surrogacy company called Biotexcom with a promo video explaining how desperate Ukrainian women can come to their bunkers and have their uteruses turned into a baby-making machine. Watch.
Now I will show you our bomb shelter, where we will transfer our clients and their newborns in case of the outbreak of hostilities in Kyiv. Let's go. Here is a toilet.
Here is a toilet.
Here we have a first aid kit. There are all the medications needed to administer first aid. Here you can see gas masks. There are instructions on how to use a gas mask all over the shelter. This bomb shelter can hold up to 200 people who will feel comfortable here. Here is our sitting and bedding zone. There are sleeping bags and beds. It's possible to sit or lie here. We have enough sleeping bags and gas masks for everyone who will stay here. There are shelvings with food, as well as tableware, napkins, diapers, and all the stuff needed for babies. Newborns will feel comfortable here. Everything needed can be done here. Here is our children's area. Here we can place newborn babies. There are special cots prepared for them. There are also cribs for a bit older babies. You can see that babies feel absolutely comfortable here. We have everything needed. Diapers, cribs, blankets, clothes, food, everything needed.
But if she's talking in a hypothetical about a bomb shelter, why are there babies there now?
Well, it's not a hypothetical. This is where they are going to have a baby-making factory. This is where you go to be a surrogate. This is, you need a womb? We've got you covered. Go ahead, David.
I was going to say, maybe those are just extras. You know, they have these, they make these videos, they bring in people and to set up these shots. So maybe they're just all actors.
Tester babies.
They're actors.
Yeah, tester babies.
Right. The rent a womb business, and call it whatever you want. People in the chat are saying this is absolutely sick. This is what's happening. The rent a womb business is actually booming and is expected to double next year. The amount of money that's brought in on this rent a womb business is expected to double this next year. And the best place to do this right now is in Ukraine, where desperate women are being exploited. The Gray Zone, according to Jeremy Lafredo, reporting for The Gray Zone today, quote, surrogates have to be from poorer places than their clients, explained the medical director of Kyiv's largest baby factory. Of course, that makes sense. Here's a direct quote from The Gray Zone's reporting on this. Penchoda of the Swiss-based Biotexcom says the business model that enabled him to build one of the most profitable surrogacy companies in the world is simple exploitation. Quote, we are looking for women in the former Soviet republics because logically the women have to be from poorer places than our clients. Yes, rich people can rent out the wombs. It's no surprise, then, that Biotexcom's quest for rentable wombs has led it to the seemingly endless pool of desperate young women in war-torn Ukraine. 8 years of conflict, combined with the subsequent proxy war between NATO and Russia, has plunged Ukraine into economic disaster. As Ukrainians sank into poverty, their country swiftly emerged as the international capital of the surrogacy industry. Today, Ukraine controls at least a quarter of the global market, despite being home to fewer than 1% of the world's population. How did that happen? Those numbers. Alongside the industry's rise, a seedy medical underworld filled with patient abuse and corruption took hold of the country. But it is worth pointing out that even before the war, the United Nations and other human rights organizations were sending off alarm bells about Ukraine's child trafficking and organ harvesting. They had a big problem. Shortly after 2014, NATO launched its proxy war against the people of the Donbas. We called it, you know, we call it a genocide, and it provided the perfect opportunity to use those victims in all sorts of nefarious ways, from organ trafficking to child trafficking. And the world was aware of what was happening in Ukraine. For instance, on your screen right now is a Huffington Post report. 2015. This is a 2015 Huffington Post report that I hunted down today.
Back when the media didn't feel motivated to tell lies about Ukraine.
No.
Yeah, back when you could call Hydra, Hydra. Back when you could actually use the term and not be suspended for hate speech.
Yeah, you're right. So this is 2015. From the Huffington Post, not exactly a right-wing publication, dropped this bombshell report saying Ukraine's orphanages feeder for child trafficking, reads the headline. Ukraine's orphanages are feeder for child trafficking. The report highlights the findings of a three-year-long investigation into Ukraine's orphanages and found that children are at risk of being trafficked for sex, labor, and the selling of their organs. Yes, organ harvesting. The report says, quote, some 82,000 children are said to have lived in these facilities, although no one seems to know for sure. Some Ukrainian activists put the number closer to 200,000 children, according to the report. Don't believe it? Well, you don't have to.
It seems so unbelievable, right?
It does. It seems so unbelievable. You don't have to believe it, though. You don't have to listen to their investigation. You can actually visit the U.S. State Department's website right now. Go to the State Department's website yourself, like I did. And you can read right from their own 2014 report. Here's the U.S. State Department report. This is the U.S. State Department's 2014 report on human trafficking. In 2014, the U.S. State Department's Trafficking in Persons report stated that children in orphanages and crisis centers continue to be particularly vulnerable to trafficking within Ukraine. Here's a quote. Take a look at this. About the risks of being involved in criminal activities abroad, the government of Ukraine did not report any investigations or prosecutions of government employees for alleged complicity in trafficking-related offenses during the reporting period, despite reports of corruption in other sectors of the government.
Oh, no?
Now, you know, add to that, like right now, at this particular point in time, we are paying probably some of those people's pensions, salaries, the people that were involved in that.
Because the government employees, yes.
Yeah. And that's just the money that's on the books.
Right.
Right. All of the money that's funneled there that's off the books and they're receiving. The section on Ukraine in this report is particularly disturbing. It highlights how the government essentially ignores child trafficking and turns a blind eye to it. The U.S. State Department report even says that the Ukrainian government wouldn't even prosecute its own government officials who were involved in child trafficking. If you could imagine anything more troubling than having these children sold off for sex trafficking, imagine their organs being sold off on the black market. You don't have to imagine it. It's actually happening at an increased clip, by the way. Now, you'll recall... Well, take a look at this on your screen. So this is inside. This is a report on the inside, the massive multi-billion dollar global organ trafficking industry. It's massive. And according to the World Health Organization, organ trade is the buying and selling of organs outside of national medical systems and for profit. Global Financial Integrity, nonprofit, estimates that 10% of all organ transplants, including lungs, heart, and liver, are done via trafficked organs. 10% of them. I think that number is low, according to other reports I've read. But just 10% is enough. If you want a kidney on the black market, by the way, the going rate today, according to the numbers that I research, you could pay $30,000 to get a black market kidney. $30,000. One kidney is traded on the black market, according to the reports, every hour. Every hour. Last year, Russian authorities discovered that Red Cross, They found these Red Cross files in a hospital in Mariupol once they took over this hospital. They discovered that files that had children's organs listed on them. According to investigators, according to the reports at the time from Sputnik News, hundreds of medical files found at the Red Cross base contain information on children's healthy organs with no indication of any illnesses. The files also have data on who the child's parents are. Want to make some money? Sell off one of your child's kidneys. $30,000 on the black market. It's a great and highly lucrative business. You know, we had Tim Ballard, and I'll just sort of get us out of here on this point. We had Tim Ballard on the show, who, of course, was featured prominently in the Sound of Freedom show, the movie. Jim Caviezel plays him in the Sound of Freedom. So I asked him about this, and specifically we talked about Ukraine and one of the multinational rings of child trafficking that he was able to bust up with his team started in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And he went into great detail about that. If you want to seek out more information on that, I encourage you to go watch my full deep dive hour-long interview with Tim Ballard on that specific point. And we got later in the interview to talking about organ harvesting. And he said, thank you for covering this topic. No one wants to talk about it. No one will ask me these questions about it. No one will cover this part of the story. And yet it's a multi-billion dollar industry. And the human trafficking element of this is upwards of $200 billion. So you think about the billions of dollars being made by taking these women, putting them in these bunkers, selling off their babies. This is what's happening before our eyes right now. And you discover these documents, you find these Red Cross documents that Russia says it was going to investigate in Mariupol. I don't know the outset or the outcome of that investigation yet and what if they've been able to confirm that. But it's all very, very troubling. And please sound the alarm on this. Like, we can't be the only show covering this. Please, please, please share this information out there with other people.
I'll say it. Yeah, it does. It just seems almost too much. You
but
know,
why do people put their head in their sand with this stuff? I just had another interview earlier today about this. And I have to say, it's like we can cover certain things, right? We can cover like big stories. But when it gets down to stuff as unbelievable as this, and we have the data, the U.S. State Department has the data, yeah. The United Nations has the data, people put their head in the sand. They're like an ostrich syndrome with this kind of shit.
What do you think, David?
Well, I was just going to say, I think it's because of the cancel culture. I think everybody is so, like, they have convinced us on all these different things, COVID, all this stuff, that if we talk about it, we can get canceled. We can get removed from social media. We can get removed from things that we do in our daily lives. And I think a lot of people just look at it as, it's just not worth the risk. You know,
yeah.
It's only the people that are like, you know what? Yeah. I don't care about the risk. This is something that I'm passionate about. Like me, I don't mind talking about it. I will say it till my face turns blue because I believe that it's something that is needs to be talked about. But some people just cannot handle making waves like that.
Right. I feel uncomfortable about it because I'm like, how crazy can one story be? Like now in Ukraine, we've got the Burisma angle around energy corruption. We've got Hunter Biden. We have now documents about biolabs. We have now this baby harvesting. And all of it seems credible. And it almost seems like we've gone so far from this Putin's a madman and just wants Ukraine for his own, you know, because he's just this nefarious person who wants more and more land, to a story where things make sense, but they feel so uncomfortable to go this far that it's almost like, I just can't keep looking here, right? I feel that way. Like, it's scary and it's so much. It fits and it's awful. And so...
David's in the chat. David's 1133, says, most people are dumb. They're normies, Clayton. Just forget them. I have. Normies. I've never heard that before.
Oh, yeah. I have.
Normies, where people just sort of like blindly walk through the day. I mean, it's like the Matrix in a way, right?
Sure.
It's like just sort of like the people, they don't want to see it. They want to like live in their own like little world where they go to Target and they come home and they're like, what, child harvesting? I can't even think about it.
I saw somebody equate it to zombies. Like there are people walking around as zombies, and I think it's because this country and this world is so medicated. Like I don't think I know anybody under the age of 40 that is not on some kind of pharmaceutical, you know? And so I feel like we have zombified people, and you talk about like Alex Jones level, you know, water manipulation and stuff. I mean, there are things that they're doing that keep us from being active in a lot of things. I think
that's a good point.
I think there's a million reasons that we're continuing to be zombified. You know, things I talk about with my kids all the time, like you have to work hard to not be made dumber by, you know, your electronics. You have to work hard to not be made fatter by the food show, you know, in the grocery store. Like, you have to rein back yourself in because modern life is just not on our side. You have to work hard to be an adult because the world wants you to stay in school until you're 35 and not make any productive decisions. You have to, like, there are a lot of things in the society that we've created that make us more comfortable but worse. And so for that reason alone, you know, just sort of deeper study is uncomfortable. Conversations like this are uncomfortable. So
yeah,
we appreciate that you're here and your responses, and, you know, hit that like button and share this if you think that other people would like to be involved in a conversation like this. You know, we don't want to talk about this stuff. Nobody wants to.
I wish child trafficking didn't exist.
Sure.
You know, like, I would love for that not to be a topic. I would love to open the show one day and say, today we're learning about a garden. People have been planting flowers everywhere because there's no wars. There's no corrupt people doing horrible things. I would love that. I would absolutely love that.
John Krasinski style.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, we have 3,000 likes right now, and there's almost 25,000 of you watching right now, which is the size of a stadium. Think about that, right? That's the size of going to see a performer at a stadium, the amount of people that are watching right now, which is amazing. Please hit that like button and push it up even higher, because it actually pushes us further out in the YouTube algorithm, which they love to suppress us. So please, when you do that, it actually pushes us further out into the algorithm. We've got Patrick Lancaster with a special report on these captured Ukrainian tanks. What is Russia doing with them? Well, wait till you see this. Frontline report on that in just moments. And will Ukraine become the next Middle East? Zelensky's already said he wants to turn Ukraine into the next Israel. Is that what the future holds? That's what the future holds for Ukraine?
Meanwhile, Israel doesn't even want to be the next Israel. There's political parties inside of Israel saying, we're done being best friends with the West now. We're kind of done with this. So is this a good template worth following? Plus, the mainstream media apologizes for misleading us about COVID. Not really. I mean, they admit on this new hot mic leaked tape that they did it wrong, that they were biased. It's not an apology. It's not the apology we're owed that we've been waiting for, but it's something.
But first, guess what? It's a big day in Canada, a big day for one of our partners. They've been with us they've helped promote and sponsor our show now for since the beginning, and our friends over at Moomoo. So it's a very big day because they today have launched in Canada, and you can celebrate with a $100 bonus, a reward for a limited time offer right now through the end of August. If you're in Canada, you can get up to $100. Went up to $100 when you register with Moomoo in Canada. So yes, if you're in Canada, you can sign up, but the rest of you guys can all sign up no matter where you are right now. Go to redacted.inc/Moomoo and you can open up my favorite trading app and start trading stocks, start using alerts, trade stocks like a pro in no time. Plus, it offers powerful tools often reserved for experienced investors. You get customizable watch list, advanced charting capabilities. So I get alerts throughout the day on my Moomoo app because I have different metals companies that I invest in, silver, gold, different precious metals companies that I follow and keep an eye on what's happening. You can set different alerts. So throughout the day, you can see what's going on in the markets. I like to see what's happening with silver prices and see what's happening on the commodities market, see what's happening with oil prices and things like that. You can do all of that right inside the app, and it's totally free to download. Plus, when you download, you can get up to 16 free stocks. And right now, you can either get a Tesla or a Google stock. That's right, one share of either of those just for opening your account and making your initial deposits. So go to redacted.inc/Moomoo. We'll also have links in the description. Again, that's redacted.inc/Moomoo. One more time, redacted.inc/Moomoo.
I'm Patrick Lancaster, and right now we have a very special report coming to you from the front line. Right now we are between the Zaporozhye front and the Ugledar front. We are in Russian-controlled territory, and in fact, this tank right behind me is a Ukrainian tank from the Azov battalion. But we are with Kaskad, which is a part of the Ministry of Internal Affairs. And these Russian soldiers are getting ready to use this former Ukrainian tank that was captured last year to fire against Ukrainian forces here on the front line. We're here with a whole group of Russian forces tanks. We're not sure if we're going to see this one fire or other ones firing, but right now we're going to see them start to prepare this tank for battle, and we're going to talk to the commander and see what the real situation is here on the ground, on the front line, where the front mainstream media won't go. So let's take a closer look.
Я командир танка. Позывной мой Сара.
Какая танка это?
Это танк Т-64 Булат. Отобранный в полка Азов на Азовстале.
И как давно у вас это?
Этот танк уже больше года находится у нас и выполняет боевые задачи.
Что вы будете делать сейчас?
Сейчас мы сидим на боевом дежурстве, ждем выполнения боевых команд.
Все, спасибо. Как вы знаете, это украинский или Азов танка?
Ну, во-первых, Т-64 Булат находится на вооружении только в Украине. Во-вторых, здесь надписи. Он, походу, и шел только на экспорт.
Либо им передала какая-то страна другая. Во-вторых...
Как латинский, да?
Ну да, какой-то неизвестный язык.
Во-вторых, пиксель украинский.
Ага, русский никак это, да?
Нет, в России совсем другой раскраска. И в-третьих, вон сзади у них написано, что это был танк полка Азов. Вот здесь, если вы присмотритесь.
Ага, Азов, да?
Да.
Ага, понял.
So right here we see the automatic launcher, our loader, you could say. The shells are underneath, and we see where it comes up and loads.
Может сказать, что это Каскад?
Каскад – это боевое подразделение, которому, я считаю, нет равных против украинских солдат. Вообще нет равных.
Ага. И, но, как я понимаю, это не частные армии, да?
Нет.
Это, что это именно?
Это подразделение, которое собрано с множества организаций МВД в одну организацию, которая выполняет чисто боевые задачи.
Ага, как внутренний министр внутренней сделки, да?
Да.
Ага, понял. Можно сказать, вы откуда?
Я сам местный.
Местный?
С Донецка.
Донец, да? Ага. И почему вы в Арбат?
Ну, как бы, 10 лет моей жизни я отдал за то, чтобы мой поселок не страдал, мои дети, жена, мать.
Возле аэропорта, да?
Да.
Ага, моя жена в поселок тоже Октябрьский.
Не, я не с Октябрьского, ну, ага. Там, где На данный момент мой поселок сейчас очень сильно обстреливается.
Понял.
И, ну, как бы я пошел еще с 2014 года и хочу сказать, пусть лучше украинские войска сложат оружие и сдаются в плен. Иначе выхода у них нет, как у них будет только смерть.
И что нужно за война закончена?
Что нужно?
Да.
Нужно идти вперед.
Вы слышали, недавно Крымский мост был взрывом?
Да, там погибло 2 человека. Я считаю, это подлый поступок со стороны украинских военных, потому как на нем находятся гражданские люди. Это не военный объект, это всего лишь мост, который соединяет Крым и Россию.
Ну вот вообще это как-то может повлиять на ход боевых действий?
Не повлияет ни на снабжение, ни на дух наш, ни на что не повлияет. Мы как выполняли боевые задачи, так и будем их выполнять.
Ну все, спасибо. А можете сказать, что это?
Это Т-64Б, украинский танк.
А тоже украинский?
Да.
Ага, и как давно у вас это?
Тоже год назад, это мы в марте месяце под Волноваха его забрали.
А Волноваха.
Да.
So, это другое, это за Мариуполь,
да.
Это за Волноваха.
Да, ага.
Да. Вижу дырка там, что это, за бой или что?
Ну, попали мальца рядышком, осколок пробил бак. Так вроде бы ничего критического нету. Машина на ходу, экипаж цел, все хорошо.
Ну, как момент был, когда вас нашли это лаборатория? Это, да?
Ну, как, у нас разведка работала. Доложила, где есть скопление техник и куда будет работать артиллерия. И вот и самый целый экземпляр к нам достался.
So, ну, когда нашли это, никто был?
Никого не было. Это пустая машина была, мы ее просто на трасса оттянули, сами перебрали, все почистили, все покрасили. Вообще его название «Монгол». Его так прозывала вооруженная сила Украины.
All right. Well, we've shown you 2 different tanks here. There's other tanks that are Russian tanks in the area. And as they said, the commander said, they're waiting on orders to get the word to go into tank battle. All right, it's been several hours since we met with the tank crew. And the orders finally came to the tank group commander to start the tank assault on Ukrainian forces and Ukrainian military positions. So right now we're with the commander headed to the firing positions of at least one of the tanks in the group, and we're going to see how they launch on to Ukrainian military positions. And right now we're going through a very muddy road, just in the middle of nowhere, basically. So hopefully we're going to try to get a little comment from the commander here on the road, and then we're going to see what the situation is on the firing position, and how the tanks fire on Ukrainian positions. As I said, we've got strict instructions on how to film, no faces. And they said we're only going to be there for a matter of minutes, and it's a very dangerous situation because at any time there could be an answer. Ukrainian forces firing back on that position. So it's a very dangerous situation, but here we go. Можете сказать, что произошло сейчас? Где мы едем?
Именно сказать не могу. Выдвигаемся на огневую позицию. Было замечено перемещение пехоты. Надо ее подавить.
All right, then.
and we're actually behind the tank. It went up in front of us, but we've got a GoPro on the tank, so we can see what the status is of the tank itself on the road here before we arrive to the primary position.
So, we are at the firing position. You just see the first shell going out. And right now, the tank battle has begun. And the Russian forces' tanks are assaulting Ukrainian forces. And we're here to show you what the real situation is on the ground. We're going to have a look at a few shots going out. We're not sure exactly how many there's going to be. But then we're going to go hopefully have a chat or just see some of the process with the commander. So now we're gonna head back. We've seen some firing. The firing's continuing. We're not sure if there's gonna be incoming right now, but we're gonna move a bit farther back.
Азимут 24, по готовности огонь. Стоп, еще один. Давай еще один.
All right, so we're back to the location where the commander is correcting the firing, and we can hear them and see them doing it now. That's another shell going out. Just trying to cover as much of this process safely as possible for you.
Well, принял,
as safe
ожидай.
As we can get.
Азимут, 24, по готовности огонь.
So if you need a little bit of a different angle of firing. Time to go. So I don't know if they're expecting the incoming now or not.
Okay, you got the push.
И все?
Все.
Как результат?
Результат очень даже положительный. Все цели уничтожены.
See what we can show you of the process of the tanks firing an assault on Ukrainian positions. You see that both Russian tanks and captured Ukrainian tanks are used to make these assaults on the Ukrainian forces. We showed you what we can here on the ground. It's time to wrap this up. I hope we get back all right, but I hope we can wrap this up right now, but if anything else happens on the road, if we're still close to the front line, we'll let you know.
All right, thanks, Patrick, and thanks for the reporting there. This is just another, I had a discussion today with a high level member of former U.S. military. He said, this is when you end this war now. And I see so many people in the chat saying, end this war now. You're throwing these Ukrainians into the meat grinder, knowing that they're not going to win, knowing that they're just being destroyed. And that's exactly what NATO wants. And that's exactly what the UK and that's what the United States right. want for this
All
people.
It accomplishes is dragging out this war so that people become rich off of it. It's not really helping anybody's lives.
Well,
it's not improving anybody's life in the Donbass. They'd like to be left alone now. Thank you very much. There is a peace rally scheduled this weekend in, I think, Minnesota or Minneapolis. I'm going to confirm that in a second. David, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like that soldier said, like all they want them to do is like surrender and stop this. But Ukraine is being pushed by the United States and by Europe and everything to keep going and do this for what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what is the end result?
Right.
Well, it's the total destruction of Ukraine. So you've literally lost, I've heard estimates today, over 300,000 Ukrainian men destroyed, gone. Over 300,000. So you've destroyed NATO has destroyed an entire generation of Ukrainians. That's what this is. And they know it, and they continue to do it. So that they can then buy up Ukraine. BlackRock can swoop in and buy up its land, take it over, and own it. That's exactly what they want. They don't give a shit about the Ukrainian people. They don't care at all about the fleeing people, the young men who've been conscripted. They don't care about them at all. They're just being used as tools by NATO. That's exactly what's happening here. Make no mistake about it.
The same way that, you know, this has happened in the Middle East when a country serves a purpose for the West and is dragged into war. That's what we're going to talk about next after the break. We're going to talk to a journalist who's been covering these parallels between the wars in the Middle East and the war in Ukraine as a cautionary tale and pointing out the rhetoric that continues to support this and where we should reject it.
James Richard in our chat says he has the Predator icon or avatar like that. He says, nobody fights knowing they'll lose. Nobody. Okay, then why? Then why are Ukrainians, are they being lied to? We've seen multiple videos now where they've released, in the past week, where they're saying we have no weapons. We know we're being thrown into this meat grinder and push for peace. So what are they fighting for then? What exactly are they fighting for?
Well, and the thing is, like we've shown here that if they don't willingly go out there and to like look like they're willingly going out there, they dropped a grenade in a bunker of them that were refusing to go.
Yeah, so or it's like shot in the back.
They're forced to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's nobody fights thing. For knowing they'll lose. Nobody, unless they're forced to fight, which is exactly the case. So that's the answer, James, I guess.
Yes.
All right. We've got more news to get to here on this Wednesday. We will talk about will Ukraine become the next Israel or the next Middle East? And also, we got this ABC hot mic moment about COVID. We're going to talk about that. Plus, we're going up to Canada to cover the LGBTQ plus 97577, whatever it's called now, up in Canada and the agenda. And there is a big pushback from the Muslim population and Christians now taking to protest in Canada about this agenda. We'll get there in a second. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Aura. We want to thank them for sponsoring the show. I have to say, you know, in Japan today, there was an announcement that because of all of the fraud that's affecting elderly Japanese, they're going to take away their bank cards. The government is saying, we're going to take away your bank cards because all of the fraud and the cyber theft that's perpetrating Japanese culture right now. And that's why Aura.com is so powerful in stopping identity theft. And Aura will identify these data brokers that are exposing your information, automatically submit opt-out requests. They'll even find all of this accessible stuff that's been stolen by data brokers who are profiting off of your information on the dark web. Robocallers, telemarketers, spammers, anyone else that wants to learn about you, Aura can find them. And what's amazing is even in just the 14 days you try for free, try it free for 14 days. And in those 2 weeks, you will be stunned at what Aura will find of your personal information that's being sold on the dark web. And you can submit opt-out information. You can get it removed. Aura is beyond just that. They're also a VPN. They're a password manager. They're real-time credit and identity theft monitoring. So if something is like pinging your credit report, you're like, what is this? They'll send you an alert to let you know what's going on. And if you had verified it or authorized it or not, you'll get 5 new alerts. You know, you get an alert saying, hey, we've got 5 alerts for you. You better check this out. So right now, I want you to try it free for 14 days. Go to aura.com/redacted. Aura.com/redacted is the place to go. Try it free for 2 weeks with our link, and you'll be shocked at how much of your private information Aura finds exposed over those 2 weeks. Once again, Aura.com/redacted.
Is Ukraine destined to be the next Middle East, meaning a place to tear down and manipulate governments by the West, destroy economies? Our guest today is Palestinian-American journalist Ramzi Baroud. He recently issued a warning to the world that Washington's Middle East strategy is destroying Ukraine. So what can we learn from this, given we have been through something similar, bringing us war to our doorstep? So I appreciate this take very much, and I wanted him to share it with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Nathan.
So are you saying that the U.S. is replaying its Middle East strategy in Ukraine? Can you explain that?
That's right. The United States' relationship with the rest of the world, mostly the Middle East, is usually this perfect model of American foreign policy gone awry. And we have seen every model or every piece of the American foreign policy puzzle kind of manifesting itself in various parts of in the Middle East over various periods of time. Like, you know, whatever we want to learn about U.S. foreign policy, whether in the South China Sea or in South America, you are going to find some version of that puzzle has already taken place in the Middle East at one point in time, but mostly in the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. The advent of the neoconservative foreign policy, and its kind of chokehold sort of control over U.S. governments one after the other, starting really mostly with George W. Bush, though evidence of the neoconservative influence on American foreign policy exists prior to the Iraq War 2003, in fact, all the way back to Serbia. But we also see it kind of manifesting itself in the Biden administration, making the same mistakes and following the same blueprint once more, and not kind of being completely oblivious to the lessons that should have been learned, but are being repeated sometimes to the letter in Ukraine at the moment.
Now, some of the parallels you drew, I thought, you know, okay, let's play this out, because we are in the middle of it now. And we like to feel like, oh, we were sold the Iraq War. Pretty much no one today thinks like, yeah, that was a good idea. Glad we did that. And yet we are swallowing the narrative again with just new players. So we had Saddam as a madman. That was the narrative. Now we have Putin as a madman. Both had been allies of the United States when it was convenient, and then became the bad guys when it was needed. So why do you think Westerners are falling for this again?
Well, because quite often the centerpiece of this discussion is the wrong discussion. Quite often we discuss whether Saddam Hussein is a good guy or a bad guy. Gaddafi, Milosevic, Putin, it's not the issue. This is not what American foreign policy is motivated by. The U.S. has invaded Iraq, not because of the energy sources, but because of the strategic and geopolitical control and manipulation of the energy sources, and for other reasons, including Israel and their allies in the region and so forth on. But unfortunately, all of these years, we have been discussing Iraq in terms of democracy, human rights, state building. Can you enforce democracy from the outside? Can you force to bring unity to a region and so forth and so on? And that has provided the neocons with the perfect academic platforms. I mean, being promoted throughout the years as public intellectuals, speaking about morality and ethics and violence, and so preemptive, so forth and so on. But really, been discussing this in terms of imperialist drives for energy sources in the Middle East. That should have been the discussion all along. So this is why the general public disagree with the Iraq War, but they haven't really agreed. We don't have this consensus as to why we actually invaded in the first place. And if you follow the narrative and the line of logic, you find that in the beginning, Iraq supposedly to restore some sort of an existing democracy. And then we went to Iraq because we needed to make those bad oppressive Sunnis, are put in their place, and the Shias are giving deserved political status. Then we wanted to support one type of Shia against another Shia sect. I am talking about Sistani versus Muqtada al-Sadr. And we keep changing storyline time and again. And eventually, we basically settled on this. Iraqis cannot accommodate democracy. This is not Scandinavia. When the best we can do for those people being ungrateful, it's not our fault somewhere else. So there has been never been a process of self-introspection from the Iraq invasion of 2003, from the first Iraq 1990-91 until this day. There has never been a public discussion on why we went to Iraq in the first, why we stayed in the East, how we destabilized the region, and had instability continue to lurk in various parts of the East, including Syria and other parts of the Middle East. We ended up being the victims, and everybody's responsible for that mess. And the same story is going to play out. In fact, part of that is already playing out in Ukraine.
Right. Well, we see that one of the theories of Stephen Gowans, who writes about Syria in Washington's Long War on Syria, was that one of the main reasons the United States was interested in Syria and Iraq and Libya is because leaders there were interested in a united Arab bloc, for lack of a better word. They wanted Middle Eastern prophets for Middle Eastern people. They wanted to basically unify themselves with other Middle Eastern regions, and the United States felt very threatened by that. We absolutely now see this happening in Ukraine, because a united Ukraine with Russia, with China, is very scary to the West. And so the need to disrupt there is great. And you're right in that we never had a postmortem on how those wars were awful. And so we're free to do another one, I suppose. And so we all sort of accept it, like, oh, okay, war just keeps coming. It's not our fault, right? So this attitude that we are allowing ourselves, like, wow, just look at this war breaking out, as if like we have no say in it, is something that I appreciated a lot. Now, you had said that, where is it? The United States were kind of shocked that the Shias were not as cooperative as the Americans wanted them to be. Can we draw this parallel with the SBU? Do you think they will be controllable? Are those the players that you see here, or do I have it wrong?
No, you have it absolutely right. I don't think the U.S. will be able to actually reap the outcome of that war in any beneficial way for the United States. As if we are quite good at managing conflicts when they are still in the realm of conflict. But when it's reaping the results and the fruit of that labor, and I'm not even a moral stance on any of these issues, I'm even thinking from an American point of view, you know, ultimately it's all about dominance, geopolitics, you know, sending our military bases from 750 or 800 to 1,000, keeping Russia in the corner, keeping the Chinese and so forth and so on. But even that point of view, the Middle East teaches us that there has been little rewards as far as U.S. foreign policy is concerned. So because we know that there will be no rewards, we in perpetuating the ability and the violence as if we are postponing the declaration of that chaos until a later date. Mm-hmm. And this has really been the main problems of American foreign policy, even prior to the takeover of the neoconservatives. American foreign policy prior to that, we just can't get any done with our stable or destabilizing, so we kind of have this continuous chaos, and that chaos is at display in the Middle East. What is Iran doing in Syria right now? Well, aside from stealing some oil from the northern regions. But they are not really serving any particular geopolitical interest. Syria is finally getting its after other powers have proven to be far more secure as far as the Syrian, as far as the civil war is concerned. The U.S. has clearly become a very marginal force in Syria, but they are not going. They are going to stay there until they are pushed out to the last soldier. The same thing happened in Afghanistan, and we have actually seen the last soldier boarding the air and taking off with some Afghanis hanging on the airplanes in one of the most shame tragic scenes in American foreign policy. But the same thing is happening in Syria. And I dare say it will happen in the Ukraine as well.
Now, Zelensky has said he wants Ukraine to be the next Israel. By that, I guess what he means is... ally to the West and disruptor of the region, I suppose. What do you think that means? And now we see, the increasing appetite inside of Israel to not be the Israel to the United States. What do you think of that comparison?
That's really interesting. This whole conversation about the security guarantees and making Ukraine the next Israel. And as you said, this is happening at a time where Israel itself is itching for a redefinition of itself and in relations to the United States and to, and this feud going between Netanyahu and Biden and the fact that Biden is yet to receive the Israeli right-wing prime minister to the White House. And during this time, they are idealizing the Israeli model as if it has been the greatest story. But I tell Zelensky, this is not going to work out. And if the U.S. gives you whatever version of security Zelensky wants, it's not going to work out for one very simple reason. Is that Israel has managed to redefine its relationship with the United States from being a client regime back in the 60s, perhaps, all the way to a so-called. And some people argue because of the power, the pro-Israeli, not just Israeli lobby in Washington, but also the people of Israel within the U.S. government itself. It's very difficult for Zelensky to replicate this model. He would have to spend years and years recreating the infrastructure that Israel has created with American political system. This is not a choice. A security agreement is not going to make Ukraine the next Israel, no matter how badly Zelensky wants this. But I think the conversation security guarantees is some sort of a middle ground. I can't give you a NATO membership at the moment, but perhaps we can satisfy you with some kind of a secure guaranteed agreement. And I personally don't think it's going to go anywhere if an agreement is being the relationship between the U.S. are so different and so unique, so particular that it can't simply be duplicated.
Yeah. Well, I find this to be just, it's a really apt comparison. And so I'm so glad that you came here to draw it for us. I think it's worthwhile for all of us to break down these propaganda narratives so that we don't just sort of sit by while these things continue to replicate and destroy countries, economies, people's lives, and families. So thank you so much for breaking this down for us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Okay, good to talk to you. You can follow, where can we follow you? On it is X or Twitter a good place or somewhere else?
At Ramzi Baroud, Y, okay. Ramzi Baroud at Twitter.
Okay. Very good. Thank you again. Good to talk to you as always.
Thanks very much. Take care. Bye bye.
Well, I hope we'll have to have Ramzi back on. We can get his internet connection better or something.
I apologize. That was choppier than I had anticipated. But great content there. So thanks for sticking with it. You can seek out his work and his own channel as well. I was going to say something about that, and it just slipped my mind.
All right. Well, we've got more news to get to here on this Wednesday. We're going to be covering the latest on COVID and when reporters actually tell the truth on a hot microphone. Wait till you see what an ABC reporter had to say on a hot microphone. Also, we're going to be looking at Justin Trudeau in Canada pushing the LGBTQ plus T9Y agenda and what the Muslim population is doing to say enough is enough. And we just got word a few minutes ago that Justin Trudeau announcing he's getting divorced or separated from his wife of 20 years. And a lot of people in the comments section for his tweet, he put out a statement saying you're getting separated after 20 years. And he said, we ask you for your privacy. And many people in the comments section were saying we would like a divorce from you in Canada.
Right.
So that was the retort up in Canada. Let us know your thoughts on that. So we'll be covering all of that and more. Yeah, we'd love to tell you about our friends over at Lear Capital.
Yes, we do want to tell you about our friends over at Lear Capital. It's no secret. If you're tuned in, then you know that experts are predicting a recession heading our way, layoffs already happening, and the government is ready to print more money, further devaluing the U.S. dollar. While last year was terrible for most investors, 2023 could be even worse. Unless you were smart and invested in gold, then you were protected from loss, while other investments fell. If the experts are right, and we do get hit with a recession, 2023 is looking even better for gold and silver investors. So if you're interested in gold, then our friends over at Lear will help you start purchasing precious metals or converting part of your IRA or your 401k into a gold and silver IRA. You can call Lear Capital today at 800-613-3557 or go to learredacted.com. Right now, if you buy 1 ounce of gold, Lear Capital is giving away a free ounce of silver. That's incredible. Literally free silver that you can keep or sell immediately. Do whatever you want. There are a lot of gold companies to choose from, and Lear Capital has over 25 years of experience, thousands of five-star reviews, and a risk-free guarantee that gives you 24 hours to review your purchase before committing to it. Lear Capital is a top choice when buying gold and silver, so call them today. Again, that's 800-613-3557, or go to learredacted.com and get your free gold and silver investor guides and receive up to $15,000 in free bonus metals with a qualified purchase. So again, to learn more, call 800-613-3557 or go to learredacted.com.
Well, an ABC News journalist caught on camera exposing the lies that his network was telling to the world about COVID-19. The ABC in question, though, is the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, not America's ABC. This week, a group of reporters were on hand for the Osman press conference for U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. He was there to speak. Here was the folks at the press conference. Here you can see the ABC reporter, Stephen Gedgetts, sitting there on the far right, waiting for the news conference, and see him there like looking down at his laptop. And he's there with Matthew Knocht and the Sydney Morning Herald and the Australian's Ben Packin. They're all there. They're all doing their thing at this press conference, waiting for Antony Blinken to arrive. The cameras were all set up, ready for Antony Blinken to speak. Here's a close-up of Gedgetts from his Twitter bio. Here's a close-up of him. Well, the microphones were hot, and these three men decided to talk about how their media organizations had handled the COVID-19 coverage. ABC's Stephen Gedgetts then makes a shocking admission, calling out his own network for failing to investigate the origins of COVID, which the U.S. intelligence agencies began in a laboratory in Wuhan, China. He starts out by calling out Sky News's Sherry, whose Australian COVID coverage has been phenomenal. She's been exposing the lies surrounding it for quite a long time now.
Her name is Sherry Markson.
Sherry Markson.
And it's somebody that they had basically Tucker Carlson'd. Like, hey, you know, she's crazy. Let's not listen to her, you know. And what they admit here is, yeah, we loved calling her crazy, but damn it if she's not turning out to be right. You know, this is a narrative that we can repeat for pretty much every COVID narrative. It doesn't matter that they're Australian. You know, other Western journalists have had this conversation as well. And so what they're saying here is like, you know, well, we wouldn't say it to her face, but just turned out to be right.
So they basically call her unhinged, but correct. Yes, oh, she's nuts, but actually she got the story correct. Listen.
Sherry's latest.
Sherry's COVID.
Sherry's
a weak.
Amazingly, she is looking more and more like
she's gone in phases.
It's just annoying.
I know,
she's
gone
in phases, she's such a pit bull, and she's so unhinged, and yet she might still be right.
And look, I would I would definitely say it's still definitely
unresolved.
Can you
be unhinged and still right?
It's persuasive.
It's looking
How
less...
How does she know it wasn't a bat?
She doesn't. No one does.
But it is the location is extremely suspicious.
It's
obviously.
It's, yeah.
I don't. You don't want to let the Chinese off the hook. Do you?
I feel like I remember being super dismissive of that, very early. Not even very early on. For a good while, I was like, "That is just the most unhinged thing ever." And I reckon it was. I was overly influenced by the fact that there were some truly nasty and crazy people who were already deep down the rabbit hole. I probably didn't look at it dispassionately enough.
Okay,
it was very,
that in and of itself, though, we should pause on, is an amazing admission about how anything connected to anyone that smelled of a conspiracy, the media dismissed because they had this elitist attitude that they were above it. And so they didn't have to be curious about anything because they had the monopoly on the narrative. And that is incredibly condescending, elitist, and damaging. And they owe us an apology for it. That admission, that sort of dismissive, like, ha ha, we got it wrong, we weren't being humble enough, means they should not be journalists. Means that anyone with that attitude should not be journalists. Just today on John Campbell's Rumble channel and YouTube channel, he talked about why the mainstream media is not curious about adverse reactions around COVID. He's saying these things now are real studies and the media won't pick it up for it. And this is the explanation for why. Because they kind of laugh about it and say, we couldn't get close to validating anything that was not mainstream. We just couldn't even circle it. We couldn't even sniff it out. So what are they then, other than propagandists? Because they're not journalists.
Do you think it's possible that journalism school has completely changed how they're pumping these people out, that they're more order takers than they are? Because are they encouraged not to look beyond the stories that they're given at this point in time? Because it seems like,
well, when you think about
explanation,
when you think about liberal universities, like what exactly, you know, what is in the public interest? What is in the public good? And what are these liberal organizations, these liberal universities actually teaching journalism students? It's a farce. I mean, and you called them a journalist. I mean, is he a journalist? He's literally there at a Antony Blinken press conference as a stenographer for these people. The people that get invited to those press conferences are stenographers,
sure,
for the empire.
Sure, but under the guise of being a journalist.
Under the guise of it. But they're not actual journalists, are they?
Yeah,
they work
for
these...
If you were an actual journalist, you would question everything that even came down from your own organization. You would be like, okay, this is coming down. I have a brain. I'm going to go look. This lady said this. We're all making fun of her. But at least explore it. You have to even go down the rabbit hole if you're a journalist of the things that people say that sound crazy, because a lot of times there's some truth there. You have to go down all of that to get to the ultimate truth.
Right. We've covered on this show certain journalistic organizations that started to release guidelines and training programs for news organizations saying that objectivity is biased, or objectivity is an artifact of white male privilege. And that truth seeking is racist and that kind of thing, that like we literally cannot ascribe to these journalistic ethics anymore because it is rooted in white male supremacy or some kind of bull crap like that. So yes, there is this sort of dismantling of truth seeking happening in certain areas, but it, you know, the lack of humility and the fact that they sort of laugh off like, we didn't really look at that, you know, dispassionately, ha, ha, ha. Well, that's only one aspect of the pandemic. That's just COVID origins, right? And people were punished for saying that COVID may have originated in a lab. People were taken off social media and called crazy and not given real explanations for what we collectively have gone through. But let's take this to another area of the pandemic when we talk about mask requirements or vaccine mandates or vaccine adverse reactions. This attitude 100% translates to all of those other things that the media is still saying we can't get close to it because conspiracy theorists are already there. We cannot even touch it. But their job is not to moralize what the narrative is and say we don't like it because we don't like the people attached to it. Their job is just to look at the truth. That's it.
Right.
And so capriciousness with which they're laughing off the way they handled the pandemic is exactly what, if the mainstream media wants to regain our trust and regain any ground, they need to apologize for. This needs to be public, not on a hot mic secretly.
Well, as the people in our chat are pointing out, as a good journalist, you don't get distracted, right? And so you're distracted by this, like that's just, you're not a journalist then. If you're distracted by this, then you're not following journalistic ethics. That's not something you do. Get distracted by these narratives companies, you know? So
yeah, it's uncomfortable when you're like, oh, you know, the way this is being presented online looks kind of crazy. Then you don't say, I'm not going to go there because I don't want to actually. I mean, I have felt that way. Like I see in my head these colleagues that I worked with at mainstream media and I'm like, oh, if they could see me like going down this rabbit hole, they'd laugh, you know, and they'd be like, oh, that's. Look, you're going into.
But they don't have to do
place,
any of that.
Right?
That's the thing. They don't have to do it. As someone else pointed out in our chat, these journalists are just pretty faces on TV most of the time. They're not actual journalists. They're not doing any actual reporting. They're sitting there as stenographers for Empire. They're not, you know, they're not like gumshoeing
readers.
Yeah, they're teleprompter readers. They're prestitutes. You know, that's one of our favorite Ava Bartlett comments. You know, these journalists on TV are just prestitutes, you know, that work for these organizations. They're not actually doing journalism, pulling the thread.
Could you imagine? Yeah. I mean, could you imagine if you were part of a news network and they handed you a certain thing to say? Like, I would have to think that the three of us would be like, there's no way I'm saying this.
Right,
but we've seen what happens. There's been people on CNN. There was a girl that wanted to cover stuff that was happening in Afghanistan. She lost her job over it because she did not want to say what was on the script. And these people know that going into it. I mean, look what happened at Fox News, you know, with Rupert Murdoch. All those people that didn't get on board with exactly what was supposed to happen were let go.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go back and continue playing that soundbite if we can. I don't know if we can. If not, let's re-rack it, though, as we cut it off halfway through. Go ahead and play it.
I probably didn't look at it dispassionately enough.
It became weirdly ideological.
Yeah, well, it just became very Trumpy.
Which it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
You sort of had...
Well, even the attacks on Fauci and stuff,
yeah.
It's sort of
yeah,
Trumpy.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You sort of had the three sort of theories there, that, you know, natural...
Yeah.
The Chinese were monkeying around with the virus.
Yeah.
Or they released it as a bioweapon sort of thing. And that
yeah,
was
the bioweapon stuff was always
on. Yeah, see, it got caught up.
And that sort of got...
No one as opposed to a lab leak.
No one rational took that seriously, but it sort of
fed into the lab leak stuff or became associated with it.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, no one rational really went down that rabbit hole.
You don't rank stories based on how crazy you are. You look into them. That's what journalism is. It's not like, oh, the Fauci stuff was too Trumpy, so we just couldn't touch that because of this value judgment. You know, the bioweapon stuff seemed too crazy, so we couldn't. I mean, in a perfect world, journalists would be saying, yeah, that stuff. Well, our colleague so-and-so looked into it and found this, or I read this about it, or about this. Like, that's not a rational discussion. That's only moralizing based on what you want, your own bias.
So Sherry responded to this. Let's listen to Sherry's response to them calling her unhinged and crazy, but actually in the end, correct. Watch.
Look, nice to hear my colleague Ben Packham defending my coverage, but calling me unhinged and a pit bull... Well, I describe my investigative book, my features, my documentary, my dozens of world-exclusive articles as careful and forensic. I've interviewed hundreds of people, both on and off the record, including whistleblowers, Wuhan sources, intelligence officials, government insiders, investigators, and more. I've spent hundreds of hours of my time away from my children or when I should have been sleeping late at night and very early in the morning to investigate this because I felt, and I still feel, it's incredibly important to know the origins of the pandemic. But more importantly, Did you hear that astonishing admission about why Stephen Jedgetts, the ABC's foreign affairs reporter, why he didn't look into this story? Because of ideology.
Yeah, because of ideology. That's the heart of it all, right?
What she did was journalism.
Right, exactly. And they were mocking her for it. And she's unhinged for actually doing journalism.
Yeah, and that pit bull part reeks of sexism. Like, that lady, she's doing work.
Right.
We're not. She's a real pit bull.
What's she out there calling people and doing interviews to find out and confirm or deny information? What is that about? She's right. A pit bull. No, she's a reporter. That's what you do to get to the bottom of it. So when will the mainstream media companies apologize for pushing this COVID narrative, carrying the water for the big pharmaceutical companies, covering up this story, the lies they were telling their audiences despite knowing the truth? It would be amazing. It would be amazing. And here are some final thoughts from Sherry on that very question.
I mean, the ABC is meant to serve public interest and public interest journalism, and the origins of the pandemic, what was unfolding in Wuhan, is absolutely in the public interest with 7 million people who have now died. But this stunning admission that a journalist didn't consider or investigate it because of ideological reasons. Paul Barry and the ABC's medical expert, Dr. Norman Swan, also dismissed a lab leak. And this attitude seems to have permeated the ABC. It's a disservice to our society, and it's a shame that public interest journalism wasn't pursued.
Yeah. Like when on this show, we pull the threads of Fort Detrick, or Fort Derrick. Fort Detrick, and pulling those threads. And, you know, it's uncomfortable, and it doesn't matter if it's uncomfortable. We did it. We covered that story, and we dove deeply into it. And we will continue to do so, wherever the facts may lead. And that shouldn't make anyone uncomfortable. And you shouldn't be distracted by anything else, you know? And if the intelligence agencies tell you it's lab leak and it's Wuhan, okay, great, question that.
Yeah.
Question everything. We should be questioning everything.
Right.
Well, and what's really weird is like that kind of thinking, that kind of journalism is now considered ultra white right wing. Anybody that's talking about the things they're talking about, anybody that's talking about the things we talk about, we are considered ultra white right wing now.
Yeah, it's crazy.
For objective journalism.
Yeah, you're a conspiracy theorist. You're crazy. I mean, you know, I have friends that have... you know, would post on social media, would post on Facebook, would post on Instagram. And they were saying the stuff that we say here on this show, and they've lost friends over it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've lost friends over it. And they're like, it's unbelievable. They have family members that won't talk to them anymore. They're called conspiracy theorists and so forth. And then guess what? They were right.
Yeah,
they were right. Do those people come back and apologize? It's almost like you wonder if the news networks will come around and apologize the way that maybe family members or friends maybe will, like, hey, John, you were right about COVID. You were right about masks.
I can tell you firsthand, none of mine have.
I really? Have apologized come to back. People for, yeah. for those
yeah.
things.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've got more news to get to here on the show. We're going to look at this latest of Trudeau pushing the LGBTQ agenda up in Canada. And
while his heterosexual relationship goes bust.
Yeah. Is he coming out about something? In Canada, be interesting to see what happens up there in Canada. He just announced his separation from his wife after 20 years. So what's happening there? Is he going to come out as non-binary? Maybe that's next for him. Maybe that's why he's pushing the LGBTQ plus
maybe.
Agenda.
He
there.
Likes costuming.
Yeah.
So maybe he wants to do that.
And he likes Klaus Schwab. He likes costuming and Klaus Schwab.
Yeah. All right. We're going to get to that. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Genucel, because if you look in the mirror and you see those dark spots, you know they're not going away on their own. So we are introducing the Dark Spot Corrector from Genucel right in time for summer. The Dark Spot Corrector, with not one but three cutting edge ingredients, goes to work fast to target sunspots, dark spots, liver spots, and even old discoloration, both on your face and hands. You'll be amazed to see how quickly you see results. You can enjoy your summer sun, beach, and barbecues without embarrassing spots. With Genucel, you'll see the results of your money back or your money back, no questions asked. So go to genucel.com/redacted right now. Get your dark spot corrector with the new Genucel most popular package featuring summer essentials like the best-selling Ultra Retinol Moisturizer with a powerful retinol alternative for safe use in the summer sun. Now, once again, that URL is genucel.com/redacted for these amazing summer essentials and save over 70% off Genucel's most popular packages. So don't wait. Order Genucel's right now most popular package with free shipping, free returns, and the best luxury skincare you've ever used, all at 70% off. That's genucel.com/redacted. Once again, genucel.com/redacted. All orders will include a mystery luxury gift while supplies last at genucel.com/redacted.
Well, to Canada now, where the Trudeau government is pushing the LGBTQ plus LTY agenda in the nation's school system. If you're enrolling your children right now in preschool or kindergarten, you'll be told, hey, they won't be addressed as he or she. That's something the school systems are doing. Parents are being notified of this. They won't be given them biological pronouns. The kids will instead need to eventually decide what they will be called, despite what the parents want. Yes, this is happening in Canada. The most vocal critics of Trudeau's policies in Canada are coming largely from the Muslim population, telling Trudeau to keep your ideology away from our children. Protests have been erupting across Canada, and now Muslim activists are joining together with Christians in order to stage a million-person march across Canada in September, calling on people of all faiths to come out and denounce this gender ideology in schools. David Creighton has been writing about this at the Post Millennial and joins us now. And David, you just had a really fascinating interview with the organizer of this million person march. This is Kamel El-Sheikh, who's organizing this, trying to bring together all faiths to march on the Trudeau government and say enough is enough. What did you find?
Well, I was fascinated because I looked up Kamel El-Sheikh after I discovered he was the motivator, the chief motivator behind all of these protests that we've been experiencing here in Ottawa. And they've been massive protests. And he has been coordinating with other Muslims across Canada, primarily in Calgary and in the Maritimes. So when he told me about this million person march, I first thought, well, you know, that's optimistic because a lot of people talk about these million man or million person marches. But when he told me the network he has created, that this isn't just going to be Ottawa, it's going to be from coast to coast, I think this is a realizable objective. And, you know, the question I first asked when Muslims started taking to the streets and literally had children were stomping on the gay pride flag, I said, this is a real conundrum for the Trudeau government and for Justin Trudeau, because he always talks about Islamophobia. And he talks about transphobia. So which phobia is going to trump the other? Clearly, homophobia is trumping Islamophobia, and transphobia is trumping Islamophobia. But that's what happens when you have a country that is no longer subject just to the rule of law, but to identity politics.
So in your interview with El-Sheikh, he was specifically talking about this agenda being foisted on children. And I think he even shared photographs with you showing some of these school pamphlets that are being handed out to children. Can you talk about that? What does it say?
Yeah, that's the first time I think we've publicly released some of this literature. And he sent me these screenshots that he had taken of the pamphlets that are being given to Muslim children. So it not only proves that the education system is targeting Muslim children, it shows that they're trying to demonstrate, which whatever means possible, that there's somehow a correlation between being a Muslim and being a member of the LGBT community. And clearly, there is a contradiction there with the Quran, as there is with the Bible. And the Muslims are saying that stop pretending that this should all be self-evident to children, and stop indoctrinating our children into ideas and theology, really. This is ideology and theology that is contrary to basic Muslim beliefs. And I think it's interesting that the Muslims have finally had enough of this. And in this country, we've not seen the pushback from evangelical Christians and conservative Catholics over this. But I think the movement that Kamel has begun here is going to bring a religious unity to Canada that we've never seen before. It's going to unite Protestants, evangelicals, Roman Catholics, Muslims, Hindus, Sikhs, all of which are beginning to say there's something wrong with children being forced to be indoctrinated into this ideology. And I think this is where this is going. I think it's going to be a beautiful outcome of unity amongst all faiths and races.
I would love that. I absolutely hope that Canada leads the charge on this. That would be amazing. One of the things that El Sheikh told you in your interview, he talked about the school system, and he was curious so why the Trudeau government is so obsessed with teaching sexuality to children and basically lying to these children and not even focusing on education. They're more concerned with sort of handing out these sexualized pamphlets to children, even handing out one pamphlet says, "Can I still be a Muslim if I'm queer?" And we've seen some of the horrible books that are being also put inside of Canadian schools as well with the imagery. And it's shocking stuff.
Well, if this was a heterosexual movement pushing pornography in the schools, it would never have gotten off the ground. But somehow this is allowable if it's all under the banner of the LGBTQ plus movement. And some of the material that children are being exposed to is just so vile. And yet we don't seem to be able to teach children how to read or write or add. And the school system in Canada is as bad as I read about the school system in the United States, because they're so obsessed with teaching children how to masturbate and how to view sexually explicit materials that they've forgotten what the purpose of education is. And this is a tragedy. And it's a tragedy foremost for the children in Canada who are being denied a proper and basic education and being exposed to things that at one time you couldn't find on the street, but they're being digested in the classroom. And this really is a travesty. And thank God there's enough concerned parents out there who say we need to save our children and save their minds from this indoctrination.
What has his conversations with the Trudeau administration? Is the Trudeau administration concerned that they're going to see this million-person march across Canada denouncing their gender ideology pushing in schools?
They should be concerned, because there's a poll released last week, and I included this in my post-millennial article, that there's now a plurality of immigrants, of Canadians who were not born in this country, that are voting conservative. It's like 48% versus 38% that are voting liberal. Now, this is a complete transformation of the political process in Canada, where the liberals, like the Democrats in the United States, always assumed if they brought in enough immigrants, they would get their votes. Not happening anymore. It's the immigrants, the new immigrants in Canada, who are saying, we came to Canada to get away from indoctrination, to get away from thought control, to get away from censorship, all of these things the Trudeau government is pushing on this country. So it's the new immigrants who are pushing back the hardest. So I think Trudeau has a lot to be worried about. And if this million-person march comes off, as I believe it will, I think that might be a wake-up call. But Will, he cannot change. He cannot change his ideology because he is too much invested in it, and he will go down with that ship.
One of the big issues, of course, that they're fighting against is this idea that children could change their gender without telling their parents. Well, you can never change your gender, of course, but that they could go and receive some sort of surgery without telling their parents, or simply change their pronouns without telling their parents. And of course, Christian leaders and Muslim leaders in Canada are opposed to this. But the Muslim side of this has been much more outspoken. Have you been surprised? Maybe on the Christian side of this, you're starting to hear more and more vocal leadership speaking out against this, are you not?
We're beginning to, but it's taken far too long. Because if you consider the fact that 12-year-olds in this country, and in any country that I'm aware of, they don't vote, they can't own firearms, they can't drink, they can't do a lot of things that adults can do. But however, they can decide to change their gender and literally change their sex. And this is absolutely outrageous. They can be chemically castrated without even telling their parents that this process is beginning. And this is outrageous. And if Christians aren't upset about this, if they haven't said, you know, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore, I don't know what's wrong with them, because it's time for parents to say, we're losing a generation of children to a liberal ideology that is toxic and that is literally destroying children's lives. You can't make decisions on your gender at 12 years old because it's so consequential. It is so long term. And it's devastating, and we should not be allowing this to happen, at least without parental consent or knowledge. And this is the nanny state gone mad. We have Trudeau saying the state has a right to make these decisions on behalf of your children. The children don't need to talk to their parents, because as long as the teachers are aware of it, it's okay.
Unbelievable. It's really, it's stunning. It's like a world I don't even recognize anymore. My father passed away at 86 years old just a few short years ago. And I think, my gosh, if he were alive today, he wouldn't even recognize this world. You know, it's really, really stunning. So good for, go ahead.
I say the same thing all the time. It's not the world or the country that I was even born in. And it's so much has changed so radically over the last three decades. It's alarming. But Canada is also the home of assisted suicide. So on the one hand, we're killing people because they're depressed. We're killing people because they just want to die. But we're destroying the younger generation at the same time. And it is a sad story. But the hopeful thing is if people are fighting back. And if it took the Muslims. And you know what's interesting is the left is adopting the same talking points that the far right used to use against the Muslims. They're saying every Muslim is a terrorist. Every Muslim wants jihad. Every Muslim wants Sharia law. They're using the same toxic talking points that were once reserved for the far right. It just goes to show you how desperate they are, is that they will use this kind of hateful language. And by the way, Camille was banished from Twitter the night after we did that interview. Now, is this a coincidence? I don't think so, because the response was phenomenal. And he has been targeted by the LGBTQ mafia in this country. There are literally dozens of people who were checking his Twitter account to find one tweet that could have been construed as hateful, because they want him silenced. And they're after other Muslims as well. I'm interviewing a Muslim woman who has a PhD. She's a civil engineer, and her job is in danger because she's been attacked on Twitter as a hateful Muslim every day. And this is how desperate the left is.
Well, we hope that this rally, this million person march to protest against gender ideology and Pride Month in schools can take hold. That's going to happen on September 20th as Canadians from all faiths from coast to coast come out on this. So we hope that this is a wake-up call in Canada, and hopefully something will change. David Creighton has been following this and doing a great job as always. David, great to see you. Thank you so much for bringing this to our attention.
Thank you for having me today.
Well, thanks again, David. And thanks to all of you for subscribing to the channel, whether it's on Rumble, whether it's on YouTube. We really, really appreciate it. And, you know, we don't ask you to do much, but if you would be so kind to just subscribe and even share the show with someone that you think could use maybe a little kick in the pants. Open their eyes to some of this stuff, covering the things that they don't get to see when they're watching CNN. You know, text it to a friend that you know is like a big CNN watcher. That would be great. So all you need to do is click on the share icon and share our show out with somebody. That would be wonderful. But again, please subscribe to the show. It's very, very easy to do, and it's totally free. I know the idea of subscribe thing, you think you have to pay money. You do not. It's free, whether it's on YouTube, whether it's on Rumble. Just click the join button there if you'd like, and follow us there. So thank you for recently pushing us past 2 million subscribers on YouTube and close to 400,000 now on Rumble. And it means the world to us. But it really means, I think, getting these stories out to a broader audience. And that's what this is all about. So thank you guys so much for your support. Thank you for joining us every night at 4 p.m. Eastern time. We are live at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So set your clock there, set your reminders, and we'll see you back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time for another big show on our Thursday. Have a great night, everyone.